You know, we can't all be quite as cool as Ron Van Dam. But then again, most of us haven't had quite as long to work on it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, that's enough of that.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
That'll be enough of that, please. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please save your applause till the end of the program. It screws me up when you stand up and applaud. I can't take it. I'm too humble. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the person to which it is referred in the title of the program. Figure that out. This is our time together. This is our quiet time. So you sit down and be quiet, and I'll talk for an extended period of time. I swear you'll have enough time left over to do other things. I swear. You know, this isn't all about me. Kind of, actually it is. Whatever. Do you know what day this is? It's Sunday. No, it's Friday. No. It's Tuesday. That's what it is. It's Tuesday. And it's the first Tuesday in July. And you know what that means. It's Christmas. What? I've been watching television a lot. More than I usually do, which is all the time now for something to do and get my mind off of the stupid things that are going on all over the globe. So I watch a lot of TV, and every once in a while I'll just breeze back the Home Shopping Club and QVC and all those things where they sell you things 24 hours a day. And now they're doing their big Christmas in July. That's the big push now, Christmas in July. Who knew that Christmas would show up 6 months earlier in July? My God, I better go out and get my tree before there are none left. I'm looking for a balsam pine from Canada this year. So, I think in certain parts of the country, it is very warm when it's Christmas. And of course, that's not right. And even people in California and in warm climates know that's not right. They just know that. All right. That's called the opening of the show banter. It goes absolutely nowhere. It just wastes your time. So let's not do that. Let's make your time valuable, the time that we have together. It's very, very important. Okay, all right, fine. So how are you? How are you doing amongst all these problems that we're having, huh? I was driving around yesterday, aimlessly, by the way, looking for something to do, and I can't find anything. I refuse to go inside stores where there are people. I've always felt that way. So this is no different, really. So I'm driving around, and I'm passing an Olive Garden. Sounds nice, sounds wonderful, until you've eaten there. So I'm doing the Olive Garden thing, and there's a big sign on says, takeout. And I'm figuring, all of a sudden, I'm saying, I've been to Olive Garden before. I was handcuffed and bound and gagged and taken to Olive Garden for dinner. And I wouldn't say it was a horrible experience. So anyway, what I do remember from the Olive Garden is the endless salad and the endless breadsticks. And when you're sitting there eating the endless salad and the endless breadsticks, you actually say to yourself, when is this damn thing going to end? Because you have to have it. If you're recognized by the U.S. government as being obese, and that's you, by the way, that's all of us. If you're over 60 pounds, you're obese as far as the government's concerned. I don't know why. You have to say to yourself, why am I eating so much salad? It's because it's free. Why am I eating so many breadsticks? This is ridiculous, because they just keep bringing them and it's free. Americans don't turn down free stuff. You have to be stupid. Do you want some free food? No, I really don't need. What are you, stupid? What, I just said free. What are you, stupid? So that's what they do with the Olive Garden. They throw stuff at you. So what is takeout? What is that? What is that? I'll have the Olive Garden salad to go, please. The endless salad. How are we going to figure this out? It's to go. You bring it home. You finish your salad. Do you come back again and ask for more salad? How does that work? How do you do? I guess you don't do that. Olive Garden people are very, very interesting people. I don't know if you've ever worked at Olive Garden, and if you have, I'm probably going to begin to insult you right now, but it's not your fault. It's the way they run. They run it like an army base. They're very rigid and very Olive Garden-y. You know what I mean? Olive Garden-y, that's what they are. They're very proud of themselves, and they walk around and I think they think it's a Christian thing to offer people free salad and free breadsticks. Endless. It's endless. Who used to do that? Oh, it was International House of Pancakes. Do you remember them? They're still around. It wasn't working out for them. They were going to do International House of Burgers. That didn't work at all. So they went back to the pancakes. But remember, they had the bottomless pot of coffee. If you picked up the coffee pot off the table, all the liquid would fall out the bottom. And then they said to themselves, oh, wait, that's not what we mean. That means if you want more coffee, I'll endlessly bring it to you for the rest of your life. It's like you've won the lottery, you know, coffee for the rest of your life, endlessly, bottomless. And when people were leaving the International House of Pancakes, they were like so revved up on coffee. It was unbelievable. They'd be speeding out of the parking lot at like 100 miles an hour. They were just, they had had like 29 cups of coffee. Bottomless, endless. And it wasn't good coffee. It was horrendous coffee. But it was free after the first cup. I used to enjoy going to International House of Pancakes. First of all, there's nothing international about the damn place. Pancakes with different flavored syrup, not from other countries, just different flavors. I don't know where the international came from. I guess if you ordered the, you could have the Spanish omelet, the Italian omelet, the Belgian omelet. I guess they were just throwing country names around is all they were doing. They were all the same thing, really. They just wanted to give it an international flavor. And if you've ever been to the International House of Pancakes, there's no international flavor in there at all. It's just the flavor of nothing. But I'm always impressed by the syrups. They have this giant basket of syrups there, the metal basket of syrups. There's usually about six of them in there, and they've got the maple, the imitation maple, the maple that's imitating the maple. And they've got blueberry, boysenberry. I have no idea what boysenberry is. I've never run across a boysenberry. I've seen it labeled on a jar. Looks like blueberry to me, but I don't know what a boysenberry. That sounds too much like poisonberry for me to even try the damn thing. They have strawberry syrup. Tasty. All different tastes and things. And I thought, that's a lot of fun. I'm pouring different flavored liquid sugars on my starch. This is healthy. And then I'm drinking 29 cups of coffee. And the servers at the International House of Pancakes are, when they come over, you can tell that this is all they could get for a job. They've tried everything else. This is all that was left. And you feel sorry for them, but you don't really want to tip them because there's nothing to tip here. Yes, I'm very generous with my money at the International House of Pancakes. Oh, that just sounds weird. That just sounds wrong. I don't even know what I started talking about. No, do you remember? I don't. You know, I'm not that old, really. I was born in 1623 in a castle with a moat around it. No, I'm not that old, but I think I'm starting to lose some of my brain cells. I don't know how many you start off with, and they say that as you get older, your brain cells die, but they never come back. Oh, wait, come back. No. And I don't know what information I'm losing in the dead brain cells because they don't tell you. All of a sudden, you just walk into rooms, and as soon as you get into the room, you say, why did I come in here? Oh, my God, does that happen to you, and you're only 23 years old? I know. You see what I'm talking about? They start to go quickly. Isn't that a weird feeling? Like you go to the refrigerator, you open it up, and you stare at it, and you go, why did I come in here? I don't want anything to eat. Why am I here? Yeah, walking into rooms. Oh, boy, I've got to get the... Oh, I don't know what I've got to get. What am I doing in this room? How did I get here? It's a scary feeling. Do you spend a lot of your time looking for things and you can't find... Where did I put my glasses? Oh, my God. First place I look is on the top of my head, and if they're not there, I go into a panic mode. Not that I need my glasses, it's just I don't want to forget things. You look everywhere, and then your glasses are left in the strangest places when you sit on them. What are my glasses doing in the freezer section next to the ice cream? Oh, that's right. I came this morning, I want some ice cream, and I took my glasses off, and I must have put them on the shelf in the freezer. Oh, now I remember. That's scary stuff. That's scary. And then you say to yourself, am I losing my mind? Just think back to when you were younger, when your mind was lost even then. It's not that your brain cells are dying. You started off unorganized. You've always been forgetting things. You've always misplaced things. It has nothing to do with your brain cells. Usually. I ask my doctor questions like this just to make conversation. I said, doctor, am I losing my brain cells? And she says, I don't know. Why are you asking me that? I have no idea. Because you're my doctor, and that's a medical thing. No, it's not. It's a psychological thing. I can refer you to a psychologist and the therapist if you think you're losing your mind. But I just really don't care. You know, I mean, if your shoulder hurts, you know, we'll take a look at that, I suppose. But you think you're losing your mind? That's a whole nother category, man. I didn't go to school for that. That's your freaking problem. I don't even deal with your teeth. I mean, I don't even. You got a toothache? What the hell are you coming to me for? Go to a dentist. What are you, stupid? That's my doctor. Yeah, my doctor doesn't pull any punches. Not at all. I feel like saying to her, how often do you change that lab coat? I've seen you in that. Every time I come here, which you want to be as frequently as possible. Yes, Ron, it's time to make an appointment for your follow-up. Following up what? What are you talking about? Follow-up what? We're following up your follow-up. All I do is follow-ups. What am I following? Am I following you on Twitter? What am I following here? I'm not stalking you. I'm not following you. Following you? Yes, you need to make an appointment for the follow-up. Every time I see her, she's wearing this white doctor's lab coat, and in my mind, she's only got one. Do you ever wash your clothes? Why are you wearing that same lab coat all the time? I guess it's a uniform now. I don't know. I have no. I don't want to go to the doctor in the midst of this virus thing. Because I don't want to be inside anywhere. I don't want to be inside anywhere but my place of work and my place of living. I do not want to be walking around inside places where there are other people, especially other sick people. I'm not doing it. my doctor's office calls me and says, you know, we haven't seen you in a long time. And my response is, and that's a bad thing? What are we, friends here and you miss me? Do you stay up at night saying, I haven't seen Ron in 6 months now. I love him. No, you don't do that. Come on, cut it out. Get off my back, will you? Ouch, you're on my back. Get off my back. My insurance company pays everything, apparently. I don't see the bills. I don't know what they're charging. I don't know. You know, they could say, well, Mr. Van Damme came in last February and he had his kidneys removed. Well, one of them. We just did one. Okay, we'll pay for that. No, wait a minute. They didn't touch my kidneys. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't think they do that. I think that would be fraud. Like, there's no fraud going on. All right, I've talked long enough, and I think you get the idea. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You know, the show isn't free. You don't pay for it, but other people do. So it's very important to run a commercial, and then our guest will join us, okay?
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructosey that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's Preserve Piggy Parts.
Mm-hmm. Heather Lendy joins us now. She's an author. And a new book is coming out. It's Of Bears and Ballads, an Alaskan Adventure in Small Town Politics. How you doing, Heather?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Ron. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. Congratulations on the book. Your background is doing essays and commentary on television and publication, New York Times, all that. What led you to writing this book?
Well, I ran for the local office here in Haines, Alaska. It's called the Borough Assembly. We have boroughs like you would have counties.
Yes.
Back east. But I ran in 2016 as part of, I think, a lot of women that got involved in politics because there was a woman running for president, and I was optimistic, and I thought I would, you know, be an example to my grandchildren. And, of
sure.
course, it didn't quite end up that way. And Haines, the town that I live in, is very politically active, and it's very small, and it's about as divided as the rest of the country. So it was quite an experience, and I thought there was a lot of good stories about what happened during that time.
Yes. I understand you won.
Yes. Yes, I did win. I spent $1,000 total on my campaign.
Wow.
And I think I got 501 votes.
Okay.
And so then I spent the rest of the time. It was a big learning curve, learning how to be involved in local government. And that's part of what I explain in the book. I try to let people know sort of the ins and outs of how local government works, how you create an ordinance, how Robert's Rules of Order. And some of those things are kind of funny, learning how to do that and how to speak that way.
Yeah.
But then also just a lot of how you navigate the relationships with people that you're making decisions that affect their lives.
I can imagine. It's questionable to me because the people ask things of you. They get involved in conversations, and if you can't help them out, or you discuss their viewpoint, and they're not happy with your response, then all of a sudden, they started loving you. Now they don't love you so much. It seems to be like a roller coaster of what can you do for me kind of stuff. Did you find that to be the case?
Yes, I think oftentimes that was the case, but I think often what inspired me were the people, and you have them everywhere, who work really hard for the good of community, you know, the folks that serve on the park and rec board, and all they really wanted to do was just get an outhouse built at a campground, the older, you know, the people who are always advocating for the senior citizens or the little children at a preschool. And when I was on the assembly, we actually had some budget problems like we have everywhere in the country, and we combined our senior center and our preschool by putting a preschool addition onto the senior center.
Yes.
And, you know, I just love that. I think that was one of a really good compromise to a situation where both of those entities were struggling.
Yeah, I mean, there's two kinds of, I mean, I'll phrase it politician, although that has a negative connotation these days, but let's use that term. There are good ones, and there are ones that are out to actually change for the better of the people, to make it better for the people, and there are others that are there for power purposes. Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah, and actually what was interesting, and I think it's true here as it is anywhere else.
Oh, it's a microcosm thing,
right, the people, though, who were in office, what happened in our town were the people who were serving in office really weren't, I would say, the power people. What I learned very quickly was that the so-called power brokers, for what it's worth, in a very small town, were all behind the scenes. And they seemed to have, in effect, have more sway over the mayor or the staff than the newly elected assembly members. And that's still a lot of the case in many communities, I think.
Sure.
You know, certain business leaders or people who never run for office and who couldn't get elected, but are actually kind of calling a lot of the shots. And I think that was sort of the windmill that, you know, I was tilting at. And that was, maybe I'm naive, but that was new to me. I didn't realize that.
Right.
And especially in a town our size, you think, well, what's the power exactly? like there's not, we don't have big, it's not big money. It's not, status. It's just politics. Right, left.
Power is ego, usually. It's, my way or the highway kind of thing. And that makes someone feel good about themselves when they have choice and power over other people, I guess. But anyway.
I guess.
Yeah. You've written a lot of books, I've noticed.
Well, this is my fourth book,
that's a lot. Well, that's a lot. I mean, most people don't write one. But, I mean, you were always...
Well, my books, my other books, have been If You Lived Here, I Know Your Name, and Take Good Care of the Garden and the Dogs, and Find the Good, have all been love letters to this community, and their stories about family and life in Alaska and ups and downs, and this one, they've been, people love those stories, but this is different because it intersects all of the things that I love with all of the things that are happening in the country, and I didn't even think that anybody would be particularly interested in what went on in the Haynesboro Assembly until so many of the things matched what was happening, and so many of my feelings, and how we keep relationships, and how we work on compromise, and how we function as a society. You know, so much of it depends on governing, and when government gets a bad name, which
it has,
people forget that that's also the library's open, and it's the snow being plowed, and it's, in our town, the sewer and water, it's flushing your toilet. You know, these are, when people don't like government, they all like the services that it provides. And so that's what goes on day to day. And my favorite part of the book are the interspersing the drama of the meetings or the particular scuffle or the funny story with actual board and committee reports that remind everybody what's been happening that week, really. We bought a new snowplow, the ambulance crew got an award, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think people do like government because you take it for granted that it's, that you've got that blanket under you. But when it's being abused, that's when they start to question it. I think this upcoming election nationally is going to affect everything all the way down to – to communities such as in your community, people are actually going to be motivated to take part in things for a change. Thank God, finally.
Right. And I think, I honestly think that, you know, my book, I wish that I had read it before I ran for office, that there was a book like that for somebody like me that isn't, you know, a pro-politician or isn't somebody that's trying to blow their own horn so they can go on to some other office. It's just about what it was like for one person to go into it, and I think there's a lot of good information in it for somebody running, but it's also for people who are interacting with their government, like we all are, so much more, you know, writing representatives or calling them on the phone and showing up at meetings, organizing, and what are the ways that are, you know, more effective and what are the ways that aren't so effective? You know, screaming at somebody and calling them an idiot doesn't really endear them to you. And so there's a better way to communicate.
Right.
At the same time, I think, you know, for my generation, today's my 61st birthday.
Oh, yeah, happy
birthday. I'm a grandmother, you know, and I have 5 children and 11 grandchildren. And I look at them and I'm like, this is your moment. You know, this, we got everybody into this. You guys got to get us out of it. And if I can encourage younger people to run for office, and if they can read the way I sort of bumbled along, like the perils of Pauline, maybe that will inspire them to do a better job. And I think, I think it's possible, and that, to me, like all what's happening right now and all the movements that are going on, you know, combined with the pandemic, I think young people are getting active, and
they
think they can change the system, and I think it's a good time, and I hope that this grandma inspires them.
Yes. I mean, you know, it's it is a question of people getting involved, not necessarily holding office, but making their points known to those in government. I've always believed that with age comes wisdom, and I don't think you can have a lot of wisdom unless it's an incredibly special case when you're in your 20s and even early 30s. It just, you just don't have the experience and wisdom. But those that do, when they reach their 50s and 60s and 70s, who listen, those are the golden ones.
Well, I think, though, I would disagree on a level. Some of my children are much wiser than I am in many ways.
Well,
but I think younger people, especially, what they have is passion. You know, they're excited and they're smart and they go about things differently and they don't get as easily discouraged. And I think, yes, it's true. There are some wiser. I know I'm wiser than when I was younger, but I might have been braver then, and more willing to speak out and, you know, say things. And I think that's important. But I also think there's a role for mentors, and that's what everybody needs who's running. A young person needs to have somebody.
Yes.
And for me, mine was somebody that had passed away, but I also write obituaries in Haines. And there was a guy who lived here in Haines from, he came here in 1955. He was Jewish, from New York, Columbia educated, came here to teach school, Navy veteran, and, you know, from World War II, and he taught French and journalism. His name was Ray Meneker, and he ended up, his journalism class founded the local newspaper, and then he founded the public radio station and the local conservation group and the Lynn Canal Community Players Organization, and his wife started the preschool, and he served 8 terms on the Haines Borough Assembly, you know, kind of walking around in Birkenstocks and homespun at a time when this was a logging town. Mm-hmm. And people called him Red Ray because they said he was a communist. And he would politely always explain the difference that he wasn't a communist, he was a socialist.
Okay.
And anyway, and he left a legacy here that has endured much longer than the old sawmills and the logging days. And that, I think, that gives me heart, you know, that one person really can change everything. And the other thing about Ray's story that I love is that his arch enemy really was the sawmill owner who built the town, literally the buildings on Main Street. And they ended up in Haines Assisted Living together. as two old men.
Interesting.
You know, sitting at the same table, reading books, talking, and all of those old fights from when they were young and angry dissolved. And so maybe that's where the wisdom came in.
Sounds like a movie script, to be honest
with
you.
It could be. There's stories like that everywhere I look in this town, and I'm grateful to be able to share them.
Very cool. Heather, is there a website where we can catch up on the other books as well?
Yeah, I'm really easy to find. If you Google my name, Heather Lendy, L-E-N-D-E, it's heatherlendy.com, and you can get my books anywhere books are sold, and they're at most libraries, too, and you can find out more than you ever want to know. And you can see pictures of Haynes, too. I take a lot of pictures, and I blog, and there's all sorts of stuff there, if you're just curious.
Great. The new book is Of Bears and Ballots, An Alaskan Adventure in Small Town Politics, and you can catch up on the rest as well. And congratulations, happy birthday, and all of
thank
that
you.
Stuff. Good talking to you, Heather.
Yeah, it's delightful to talk to you, too.
Great, thank you. Well, that do it for me today. I'm out of time. I'm going to be back again tomorrow, though. Oh, no. Really? Again? Yes, I do this every weekday. You know that, don't you? I just tried to forget it. I'll be back tomorrow. How could you have a Wednesday without me? Try it. Go on, try it. Okay, have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.